Hi, and welcome to the CDC Insight podcast. CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And while we're on a bit of a summer break from our regular live Insight events, in this episode, we're sharing some of the highlights from a few of our events from earlier in 2021. And all of the thoughts that are shared here are around the themes of technology and innovation, and in particular, their influence over economic growth on the continent of Africa. You'll hear from several leading investors, business people, and academics who work on the continent, including education entrepreneur Fred Swanaker, innovation academic Ifeosa Ajomo, and CDC's managing director and head of Africa, Tembite Ermias. But first, I wanted to share this clip from Dr. Franny Liotier, the CEO of Southbridge Investment, an investment firm that focuses on the African continent. Franny joined an Insight event earlier this year where she discussed the impact of tech companies in Africa.
There's been a lot in the press here in Europe about the gig economy, about Uber, and about the problems of informal employment. What are your thoughts about technology in Africa and the risk that it may fuel a sort of jobless growth in sub-Saharan Africa?
I think Colin, that's an excellent question. I think one of the results of recent surveys, which I was reading a few weeks ago, showed that when you look at the effects of COVID, for example, they have been very differentiated across African cities. Lagos has lost 56% of the people who worked in the informal economy are unemployed, compared to Addis Ababa, which has about 12%. Unemployed. So that made me think, why is there such a difference in the informal sector response to the COVID crisis? Once you remove the country responses, you find that it has a lot to do with the way in which the informal sector integrates with the broader labor market. So I would say technology in Africa provides an opportunity to actually structure the informal activity and give it a formalization so that it can succeed and scale. And this shows up in every area of introduction of the digital technologies. For example, if you look at the matatus in Nairobi that are now using mobile devices with mobile payment system, this is the high end of innovation. And therefore, they are individual owners of individual companies rather than gig workers. And then you have another dimension to it, which is being able to provide jobs in new sectors where these jobs didn't exist before in the market. You find a lot of young people who previously would leave the rural areas and go to the urban areas to work in the informal retail sector in cities. You find them standing by the side of the road and selling things because that's the only way they could make an income. But with the introduction of these new technologies, rather than them being gig workers, they're actually able to use their ingenuity and join up in e-commerce platforms to photograph and produce their products that can be purchased through a WhatsApp message. And they're being able to actually integrate and formalize and use these technologies to deliver a formal service. And the last example is the creative sector. I am very impressed when you see, for example, the music industry. Today, if you are in the music business and you haven't signed up an African artist, you're missing the next wave of music. If you are in the movie business and you haven't worked with artists and actors across Africa, you are missing the next wave. Similarly, for the fashion and food industry, with a lot of creativity in new textiles, new menus, and all of that is being driven by what you would call outside of Africa, the gig economy. But within Africa, it's really formalizing and bringing into the main market people who would have otherwise been left out.
And echoing Franny's comments about the possible impact of technology was entrepreneur Fred Swanaker, the founder of the African Leadership Group, which includes several education providers operating on the continent.
Technology is one of the greatest forces for rapid change. If you think about it, it's getting faster and faster to develop society. You know, so if you look at how long it took for the, you know, European countries to go from the poverty levels that you might see in Africa today to where they are. It took them, you know, 1,000 years, right? They went through the Renaissance period and Leonardo da Vinci, the Industrial Revolution, all that's a long time. When the US was created and they started the development journey, it took them about 300 years. Japan took them about 100 years. If you look at Singapore, South Korea, Malaysia, 60 years. China is doing 30 years. Dubai is in 15 years. So it's getting faster and faster and faster. And what is happening is that each time, each society that is developing is borrowing the ideas and the technology from the previous generation that developed, the previous society that developed. And they're just simply, it's allowing them to leapfrog and to do things faster. So you don't have to figure out how to purify water because someone else has already done that with technology. You don't have to figure out, like in Africa, we didn't have to, you know, when the mobile phone was invented, we leapfrogged and we went straight to, mobile telephony. And within 20 years, 800 million people had access to telephones. Whereas before with the traditional landline model, they weren't getting there. So technology allows you to move much faster. And right now, COVID has actually created a massive disruption where there's another huge wave of technological change, which if we move and rethink how we develop our society, it can actually be a catalyst for development in Africa. So for example, if we're talking about this job creation challenge, after this pandemic, there's going to be a great rehiring, right? Economies are gonna start growing again. And companies will suddenly need to rehire millions of workers that they had let go to get back to business as the economy recovers. So it's gonna be an exciting time for young people to find work. But what's more even exciting is that this pandemic has opened up markets for young Africa's youth to work. And you know, you can now work all over the world. Before, the market was for African talent was only on the continent. If you wanted to go and work somewhere else, you had to go through all kinds of immigration challenges and everything. Now you can sit, an engineer can sit in Tanzania and work for Siemens in Germany. A designer can sit in Kenya and work for Zara in Spain. And that's a huge opportunity for African talent enabled by technology. And so we can literally export our talent, but without the brain drain. And that's an incredible opportunity that, you know, was not available before COVID. And so obviously governments need to really remove roadblocks to enable access to data and electricity and so forth so that young people in Africa can work. But all kinds of industries, you know, governments, e-health, e-government, e-health, e-education, you know, look at Estonia. Estonia completely became a digital society in a very short period of time. And we can do the same thing in Africa. So technology is a way for us to rapidly develop, but we need to really make sure we are not left behind in the digital divide.
Tembite Ermias is CDC's head of Africa. He joined our Insight event with Fred Swanaker and explained why digital infrastructure is absolutely critical in realizing the potential impact of technology.
From CDC's perspective, you know, one of the key things that we've been focusing on is on investing in digital infrastructure. And we know from the work that we have done that investments into internet and connectivity, they drive economic growth by creating jobs, but they also drive social inclusion. And Fred touched on some of these as well, which is around education, opening up market services for people in the job space. And from the CDC perspective, how we think about that is, you know, we focus on the countries and places on the continent where the need is the greatest and where the impact can be the largest. You know, just to give you a couple of the stats around the daunting nature of the technology need on the continent, something like 20% of all businesses that need telecom services actually get services on the continent. So 80% do not. London has three times as much cloud computing capacity as the entire continent does. I think the estimate from the World Bank is that it'll take $100 billion of investment in order to achieve universal internet access on the continent by 2030. The comparable for the European Union right now is 90% of households have access already. So it's a huge thing in front of us, but I think what it says is that investing into the infrastructure is a very important part of unlocking that leapfrogging that Fred was talking about on the job side, because digital infrastructure is critical.
Now, it's clear that there's huge potential for technology to have a major impact on economies in Africa. But in one Insight event, CDC's Colin Buckley suggested that a challenge might be its inability to reach scale. He put this question to Ifeoza Ajomo, a researcher on market-creating innovations, and Nikunj Jinsi, a venture capital investor specializing in emerging markets. Here's what they had to say. First, you'll hear from Ifeoza and then from Nikunj.
So in Silicon Valley venture capital, you're often talking about the famous hockey stick, you know, that you can take a lot of risk around innovation because even though your hit rate is low, once you create a market, the market is so large, it rewards the enormous, you know, failure risk of trying to be disruptive, trying to create innovation. In Africa, by comparison, the markets are quite small. I mean, Nigeria, the GDP of Nigeria is roughly the same size of Seattle. So I'm going to start with Ifeoza on this question. I mean, how do we square this? How do companies afford this market innovation where the upside may just not be big enough?
In the late 1980s, a prominent consulting firm goes to AT&T and says, AT&T goes to a prominent consulting firm and says, we want to know if we should invest in mobile phone technology. How big is the market going to be at the turn of the century? Consulting firm does a lot of research, rigorous, the best in the world, really, and comes and says about 900,000. Market's not going to, I mean, it's your decision. You can invest if you want, but it's roughly 1 million mobile phones. AT&T decides to hit pause, because they looked at the technology at the time, the earning power, how much the mobile phones cost, who used them, and said there's not a big enough market. 2001, we had over 1 billion mobile phones in the world. Today, we have more mobile phones than we have people. And so the question is, how could AT&T, global leader, prominent consulting firm, miss it? They weren't necessarily wrong, but they were using the wrong metrics and wrong trajectory. I think to answer your question, Colin, when we look at the economy of Nigeria and we say it's about the size of Seattle, that is true. You know, you look at the GDPs and all, that is true. You look at the earning power, disposable income of the average Nigerian does not come anywhere close to perhaps even the poorest. People at a lower income in the United States. But if we assess markets that way, then we're never really going to make progress. What we have to do is say Nigeria is in a market creation phase. It's in an entirely different phase of development than Seattle is, which means the products and services that I now have to provide for the average Nigerian customer has to look necessarily different than the average Seattleite. And so if I'm providing health insurance for the average Nigerian, they don't need a $5,000 deductible or a $10,000, you know, $50 a month premium. You start with something much smaller.
So thanks, Ifeoza. Nikunj, from an investor's point of view, how do you struggle with this?
Yes and no. I think exactly to what Ifeoza was saying, the key here is to find local solutions for the local market, not looking at technology transformation or technology transfer and looking to scale down the cost of that technology. That's not going to work. One thing to add to what Ifeoza said is that much like India, for example, which is not a homogenous market. There are different cultures. People speak a different language out there. That's not all that different from what you have in sub-Saharan Africa. Yet India has found solutions that are truly scalable through, you know, fintech, Paytm, for example, that is less scaled up. Similarly, in Africa, you know, people need to be banked, whether they live in Francophone Africa or in the eastern part of Africa, they need to be banked. So M-Pesa was the first one that came out with a solution that was widely accepted. Now you're finding lots more players on the fintech side that are providing solutions on the mobile wallet side, on the peer-to-peer lending side, on the SME lending side, on the credit-driven side, on the micro-insurance side. So tons of innovation happening that is locally developed, that is meant towards for the region. So I can't think of any business that I have looked at in which they set up a business plan day one that they said, well, let's look at Tanzania only, or let's look at Nigeria only. These are regional businesses day one. And as a result, you're seeing regional entrepreneurial hubs being developed in places like Lagos, in Accra, in Nairobi. These are all meant to attract regional entrepreneurs, but also develop day one regional businesses with local solutions.
So that's pretty much it for this episode. Hopefully it's given you a good insight into some of the discussion points around the role of technology in supporting economic growth on the African continent. If you want to stay up to date with our Insight program, then please do subscribe to our newsletter. I've put a link to it in the description for this episode. That's it from me. Thanks for listening to this CDC Insight podcast. We'll see you again soon.